Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Abby Silver. I am the Chief Judge of the inaugural Court of Appeals of Nevada. To my right is Judge Jerome Tao. To my left is Judge Michael Gibbons. I would ask the attorneys to please state their names for the clerk of the court and indicate how much time you may need for rebuttal argument. You may proceed, appellant. Oh, I need to call the case. That would be good. Let's see. It's Mendoza versus State, 72056. And we will now start with the appellant's argument.
Good morning. Amanda Gregory, appearing on behalf of appellant Jorge Mendoza. May it please the court. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That will be the order.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case was essentially a robbery gone wrong. Appellant and three co-defendants attempted to rob the residence of Joseph Larson. In the midst of the attempt to rob and conduct a home invasion, everything went wrong, bullets were shot, and ultimately Monty Gibson was killed. Appellant is now asking the court to reverse the finding that Jorge Mendoza is guilty of first-degree murder and all of the other things put in the brief based upon errors made at trial. The first issue that I'm going to focus on the most is the issue regarding the jury instruction that was not permitted to Jorge Mendoza at trial. In opening statement, Mendoza argued for an instruction of self-defense. His entire defense was focused on he was defending himself, and that is why Monty Gibson was shot. He testified, as well as other witnesses, that he never entered the residence. He went to the house. They kicked in the door. The very first person in front of him was shot in the face, turned around to retreat, and was shot in the back. Mendoza was directly behind him, immediately retreated. Upon retreat, he was shot in the femur. It shattered his femur, went right through his thigh. Witnesses from other houses that were watching, as well as Mr. Mendoza, testified that Mr. Mendoza was retreating. He was in the middle of the street. He was scooting down the street. He had his rifle laying over his lap.
How far away was he from the residence when he turned around and fired at the victims?
He was in the street. So the house, it was a normal neighborhood development in Pecoli Ranch, normal track housing. He was in the street, scooting down the middle of the street with the rifle over his lap.
What law or what case can you cite that you would proffer to this court that we should follow in the case where felony murder is involved, where there's a robbery and a murder occurs, that an instruction on self-defense should be given under these particular facts?
Your Honor, NRS 200.200 states that with regards to killing in self-defense, if a person kills another in self-defense, the first section says the regular self-defense argument, it must appear that the danger was so urgent and pressing that in order to save their own life or to prevent the person from receiving great bodily harm, the killing of the other person was necessary. The second prong, which is what I think really applies here, it says, and the person killed was the assailant, or that the slayer had really and in good faith endeavored to decline any further struggle before the mortal blow was given.
So here's my question.
Wait.
So self-defense is not available to an initial aggressor. The idea is I can't start a fight with you, and then when you retaliate, I say, oh, self-defense. So in this case, it's a little bit more complicated, but the argument the state is making is that Mendoza set in motion a chain of events that was very violent. In fact, a man was killed. And then when he's running from the fight that he started, he says, oh, self-defense, you can't touch me. So what's your response to that argument?
Your Honor, and there is a case, it's not published, so it would be persuasive to the court, obviously. It's not binding. It wasn't cited in the briefing, but in further researching in preparation of today, I did find Tagu Bansa versus State. It is a case that went into where you have an initial.
What's the name of the case?
Tagu Bansa, Tagubansa versus State. It's an unpublished opinion from the Nevada Supreme Court regarding NRS 200.200 when you have an initial aggressor. And one of the things that the court ruled in that case was that the language of NRS 200.200 Section 2 indicates that if the person killed was not the original aggressor, then the slayer who was the original aggressor may have still justifiably killed in self-defense if he or she made a good faith effort to decline further struggle. I don't think there's any argument here that Mendoza attempted to decline further struggle. As soon as the shots were fired, as soon as the first person who entered the house was shot in the face and in the back, Mendoza retreated. You have the neighbors who saw him scooting down the street bleeding with his rifle across his lap. You have him testifying that then when he looked back at the house, he saw somebody at the door pointing the gun at him again, who had already shot him, pointing the gun at him again now, and he felt that the only way to preserve his own life at this time when he was trying to retreat injured was to shoot back. The only testimony that you have regarding what actually happened there other than Mr. Mendoza is Steve Larson, who is Joey Larson's dad, who wasn't there. He just testified as to what Joey Larson, his son, the drug dealer who owned the house, said happened. So you didn't even have anybody other than Jorge Mendoza saying, other than the neighbors in the street who had no reason to make anything up, that there was a man scooting backwards down the street with a rifle in his lap, bleeding out of his leg. So I definitely think that this would be one of those instances where even though he was the initial aggressor, he is able to claim self-defense because he did retreat. Also,
so how is it in this case the failure to give a self-defense instruction, how is it not harmless error in this particular case, considering the facts appear to be so overwhelming, with two co-conspirators turning state's witness, took the stand, and in fact Mendoza himself took the stand? How is it not harmless error by the district court?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's harmless error because from the very beginning, Mendoza's argument was self-defense. He only testified because he thought he was going to argue self-defense. Then it came up that the jury instruction wasn't going to be allowed. The jury wasn't going to be allowed to find self-defense. He essentially went to trial not allowed to have any defense. That is absolutely not harmless error. He had one defense that he could have put out. He had one defense that he intended to put out, and he was not allowed to have the jury even consider it. If there was one case that I cited, it was Margetts versus State. It says the court has previously stated that a defendant has a right to have the jury instructed on his theory of the case as disclosed by the evidence, no matter how weak or incredible the evidence might be. You had Mr. Mendoza, who testified he was just trying to get away. He was in fear of his life.
Well, let me ask you this. In order for your self-defense argument to make sense, essentially your argument is he was retreating from the crime.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the predicate of that is that the crime is over. So my question is this. There are cases that say that the crime of robbery extends until if the violence occurs while someone is actually escaping from the crime is still going on. So how does that square with your argument?
And, Your Honor, I don't know if I can quite answer that. I don't know if it matters that this was an attempt robbery. They never actually got into the home. They never even said, give me anything. They went there with the intent to rob, but nothing ever actually happened that would have amounted to a robbery. The door was kicked in, and the shooting started. At most, it would have been a home invasion when the first person entered into the door and possibly an attempt robbery, but nothing actually happened to amount to a robbery or even the beginning phases of a robbery. At that point, when Mr. Mendoza was in the street retreating, I believe that initial crime that they went there intending to do was over, and now Mr. Mendoza was just trying to get out of there, preserve his life, and if he didn't shoot, he felt that he was going to be killed at that point.
Ms. Gregory, how do you define retreating? Is this subjective or objective? Does it make a difference if the person retreating had a rifle as opposed to having a knife? Because a person that had a knife obviously could be away from committing the offense that was intended. But in this case, if he has a rifle, he could be a significant distance away and still be a threat. So how would the people on the other end at the house know that he's actually retreating as opposed to getting into a different position perhaps to fire his rifle?
I think in this case there is a difference between him. Actually, I don't think there is much of a difference between having a knife and a rifle here, because what you have, the people who were not in the home, who was not the people in the home were waiting for them. They were in there with guns. They knew they were coming. They were in there with guns, ordered pizza, waiting for them. They were waiting for a fight to happen. In this case, he was shot in the leg. His femur's broken. He's in the street. The other people who are far more credible here, who are just the uninvolved neighbors, said he had the rifle laying in his lap, scooting down the street. I don't see that any different as him having a knife. He wasn't pointing at them. He wasn't a threat anymore. He was clearly just trying to get away. I don't think that there would have been any question of the people in the house that he was no longer a threat. They were still out to get them back. They were in the house waiting with guns to get them in the first place, and I think once they still saw them out, if he had a chance to get them, they still were going to get him. But I don't think in any way that there's an argument he could have posed any threat. They were in the house now. They could have just gone into another room. They could have just gotten away from him. But instead, they went to the door with their rifle, with their guns. I apologize.
So why did the district court deny the instruction if these facts are as compelling as you suggest?
And, Your Honor, I can, when the court denied the self-defense instruction, one of the things she said was that one cannot start a gunfight and then argue self-defense unless there's been a definite indication that the initial aggressor is no longer a threat. She said that when she made her ruling. I just feel like she was incorrect in that statement, that there was no...
Didn't she, in that record, though, in the next breath, she said, but I agree with the state, because the state made an argument about felony murder, and that felony murder, a self-defense instruction is not entitled, or a defendant is not entitled to a self-defense instruction in the case where felony murder has been shown, basically. I mean, she didn't just say what you said.
She did, Your Honor, and Mendoza argued that that even though this was felony murder, that the felonies were over and they were in the process of retreat.
Okay, you know, you're at right at 5 minutes, all right?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from respondent, the state of Nevada.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Agnes Lexus. I'm a chief deputy district attorney at the Clark County District Attorney's Office. Your Honors, concerning the self-defense instructions which were not given by the district court, Judge Tao mentioned or brought an issue before us concerning when it is that a conspiracy or a crime stops. And as you all know, there is an instruction that's typically given that a conspiracy does not end until all co-conspirators have gotten away and concealed the crime. In this particular case, Your Honor, Judge Silver asked about how far away Mr. Mendoza was from the residence, the front door of the home where Monty Gibson was shot and killed. Your Honor, I would venture to say I have been to the scene, and I was trial counsel. He was about the distance from you and I. It was dark outside. However, there was a porch light on. And Mr. Mendoza, as much as the appellant will argue that he was trying to retreat, I will venture to say that all of the evidence, including the independent witnesses who were watching this go on from their windows, saw Mr. Mendoza, the appellant, sitting in the middle of the street, this distance away, with a rifle in his hand.
Now, well, why not, as the defense asserts, why not, if you're the district court, and maybe you can tell us, why shouldn't the district court, the defense is entitled to their theory of the case, for the jury to be instructed on that, why not just give the instruction if it's so clear-cut? They decide all issues of fact in a case, the jury. Why not just give it to them, and there wouldn't even be any question here on appeal because they're claiming an error of law as a result of the district court not giving that instruction. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, there are 2 points in response to that. First and foremost, you brought it up. This is a felony murder case. The felony murder rule is very clear in the state of Nevada. If a killing occurs during the course or during the commission of an attempted robbery, which is the case in this case, and someone dies, whether it's by accident, whether it's unintentional, the person is on the hook. All the co-conspirators are on the hook for first-degree murder. We wholeheartedly agree with the district court's ruling that self-defense does not apply in a felony murder type situation.
Well, but, so let's go back to the argument you opened with, which is the crime has to be over. Who decides that? You know, in this case, the guy's running down the street, but, you know, you can imagine all kind of facts where maybe the next guy's running down the street and he's 100 yards away. The next guy's half a mile away. The next guy's running, managed to get 2 miles away before this happens. So the question is, who decides, and if it's even arguable that the crime is over when this happens, then shouldn't the instruction be given so that the jury can decide it all?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, the jury decided the existence of the conspiracy. And so that was one of the charges found, or that was one of the charges set forth to the jury to deliberate, and they found all of the defendants guilty of the conspiracy to commit robbery and also the conspiracy, well, particularly the conspiracy to commit robbery. And so that's why I bring up that jury instruction, and that whole conspiracy, the gravamen of the crime does not end until all of them have gotten away, until they have all concealed the crime. And what we have to consider here is that these homeowners, you know, they were exercising their right to defend themselves and their property. And we're not talking about, you know, they were just sitting at home waiting for a fight, okay? We're talking about people who came in armed, one with a rifle. The appellant had a rifle in his hand with an orange mask. These people were armed like they were going to war, masked up, kicked in the door, and yes, these individuals in the home, the residents knew that this could potentially be happening, and they exercised their right to guard themselves and their property, their lives, against individuals who wanted to take things that did not belong to them.
Counsel, what about the fact that the district court let in the cellular phone records of these various defendants? The appellant is alleging error here, that they weren't turned over in a timely manner. Can you address that as well?
Yes, Your Honor. There were multiple cell phone records produced in this particular case, as is, you know, the wave of the future now in terms of proving cases, particularly conspiracies. In this particular case, Mr. DiGiacomo and I obtained cell phone records from various individuals, including the appellant. So we had Mr. Mendoza's cell phone records. We had Mr. Laguna's cell phone records. We had Mr. Figueroa's cell phone records. And we also had Mr. Murphy's cell phone records. The only cell phone records which were at issue were Mr. Murphy's text messages. So we already had his call information, and from the call information we could set out the cell tower locations, and that's how we proved the conspiracy. All of these cell phones were traveling together, communicating together during the time frame involved in this particular case. With Mr. Murphy, what we determined to have been missing were the text messages from Mr. Murphy's phone to Mr. Mendoza, to Mr. Figueroa, to Mr. Laguna. But the cell phone records themselves were also, Mr. Murphy's missing cell phone records were contained in the inbox or the sent box of Mr. Mendoza, Mr. Laguna, and Mr. Murphy's cell phone. So while, you know, we have 250 text messages that were produced that particular day on the 20th or the 19th, those text messages were already in existence in the other cell phone records because, as you know, there are sent and received messages. So say Mr. Laguna sent Mr. Mendoza, the appellant, a text message. Well, it would show in his sent, Mr. Mendoza's sent, and it would show in Mr. Laguna in his inbox. And so there are records back and forth showing the same time frame. So there was absolutely no prejudice, and Judge Ellsworth did offer a brief continuance. And Mr. Murphy, who brought this, who actually objected, I don't believe Mr. Mendoza, the appellant, actually even objected to these records. Judge Ellsworth gave Mr. Murphy's lawyer an opportunity to talk to his cell phone expert, and he indicated he only needed 2 days. And so there was absolutely no prejudice. They were still set. They were still able to put forth their defense, as well as these messages were already contained in the records. They were not in our possession. The minute they became in our possession, we complied with our continuing obligation to disclose evidence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you? Go ahead. Oh, sorry. I took you off your argument.
No, that's okay. I guess what I would like to leave with, Your Honors, is that, as Your Honors have pointed out, there was overwhelming evidence in this particular case. Concerning the self-defense instruction, you know, I understand that the state of the law is, you know, the defense is entitled to put forth a theory of the defense, no matter how weak or incredible, okay, based on what's disclosed at trial. But here you have three defendants who took the stand, including the appellant. And the evidence was so overwhelming that they were the initial aggressors. They took part in
So why not? I mean, just a question. Why not? If it's so overwhelming, how could it hurt? You know, in my day when I was a prosecutor, half the instructions were against me. And I just stood up there and told the jury how they just didn't apply to that case. But when the prosecutor argues against instructions on a constant basis, on a defense theory when generally they're entitled to it, why create possible error in a case of what otherwise could be overwhelming evidence, an error at law?
Your Honors, I think it's the distinction between what it can't be the state of the law that defendants can get on the stand, such as, you know, the appellant, Mr. Mendoza, tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, including the court, that, hey, I didn't act in self-defense. I was the initial aggressor. And then, you know, on the flip of a coin, ask for a self-defense instruction, which obviously doesn't apply. We have felony murder in play here. We have defendants, including the appellant, who testified that it was not self-defense. I understand that that's what he wants to have been able to claim, but it is not self-defense. It is not a retreat. When you are this far away from the residence or a home and individuals you are planning to rob, and you have a loaded rifle across your lap, it is not self-defense. And so you don't just have evidence that could infer that self-defense applies here. You have evidence to the absolute contrary, evidence that self-defense was not in play for so many reasons in this case.
So what if one of the occupants of the house had come out, stepped out on the lawn, walked towards Mr. Mendoza, pointed a gun at him, "I'm going to kill you"? Could he have then engaged in self-defense?
I think he needed to have shown that he was absolutely retreating, because at this point, what we have to look at is the homeowner's view. This individual that just broke down their door armed is this close away from them, still armed. So at that point, if Mr. Mendoza wanted to retreat, there was nothing stopping him from coming and saying, "Hey, I'm dropping," or, you know, pushing away the rifle, saying, "I am unarmed. I don't want to fight anymore. You know, I surrender." And that never happened. I mean, Mr. Mendoza testified he never did that. As a matter of fact, he said as he sat there, you know, in the street, and he saw the homeowners, who, by the way, according to the testimony, or at least the evidence disclosed, were just trying to get to the front door to shut it so they could feel safe in their home from these armed invaders. And so he did nothing. Mr. Mendoza did nothing to show that he was retreating or that he was abandoning this plan to hurt these people. There's no evidence. I mean, he was found with the rifle. He never at any time, Your Honors, dropped the rifle, threw it away, never screamed at the homeowners with his hands up saying, "Hey, I'm not armed. I'm not here to hurt you. Please stop." You know, none of that came out. For all intents and purposes, this man remained under the cover of darkness with a rifle across his lap. And so he was a threat when he went in that door, and he continued to be a threat all the way up until he ran off and hid in a car for police to find him. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll hear from the appellant in the rebuttal closing. You have 4 minutes and 45 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to touch on something that the state just said. They said that there was absolutely no showing that he was retreating. To get self-defense, there would have had to have been a showing that he was retreating. And she said that there was absolutely no evidence of that. She also said that the only evidence was, or that what was testified at trial, was that Monty Gibson, who was shot, was simply going to close the door. The only testimony that we have that all he was doing was closing the door was from Steve Larson, who wasn't there. Steve Larson was the father of Joey Larson, who was the drug dealer who owned the property. Steve Larson was not there. He was saying, Joey told me that Monty was going to shut the door. That's the only evidence that we have that that's what Monty was doing. The other evidence that we have is from Mr. Mendoza, who testified, saying that he was trying to get away. He thought he was in danger. The neighbor saying he was scooting, he was retreating. He had the gun across his lap. He was bleeding. I don't know what else he could have done in this dynamic, fast situation to show that he was retreating. Stood there with his hands up, then he certainly would have been shot and killed.
But isn't the trial judge in the best position to watch the proceedings, to see what evidence been produced, including your client taking the stand, and make a determination at that point of whether or not, exactly what you say, was he retreating or was this a continuous transaction? Because our standard of review on appeal is abuse of discretion. So unless it's a clear error of law here in giving this and not giving the instruction, I mean, tell us what case can you cite to that would mandate reversal based on the district court's abuse of discretion by failing to give this instruction?
And, Your Honor, I think that that first of all, I know it's. I said it was not published. It is persuasive. I'm not sure if Judge Ellsworth knew of the case. It was only a 2000.
Anything from any other jurisdictions?
I don't have anything from other jurisdictions, Your Honor. I do think that the statute for the self-defense, the 200.200 in subsection 2, does hint to us that it's not precluded from an initial aggressor if they are trying to retreat. The court's indulgence.
What year was that case anyway, the unpublished one?
The Tagubansa case was 2015, January of 2015.
January what?
January 2015.
And it's a Supreme Court?
It is a Supreme Court case.
Okay.
And it explains how...
Is it a murder case?
It is a murder case and explains how an initial assailant can potentially argue self-defense and did allow them to have self-defense in that because there was a retreat.
And so, did the district court in that case get reversed?
I believe, Your Honor, that in this case it was harmless error because of the overwhelming evidence. I do think that in this case it is different because the only evidence that we have is Mr. Mendoza's testimony of self-defense, the neighbors. I think there's overwhelming evidence that Mr. Mendoza shot and killed Monty Gibson. I think there's overwhelming evidence that they went to the house to do a robbery and a home invasion. Absolutely agree that there's overwhelming evidence of that. But there was not overwhelming evidence that when the shooting happened, that there was no way that Mendoza could have been acting in self-defense. That was an issue that should have been left to the jury. Mr. Mendoza started that first day of trial with that as his defense. When he went before closing and wasn't allowed that instruction, he was ultimately told, well, you testified, you basically conceded to all of this, and now you're not allowed to have your defense. Now the jury doesn't even get to consider what it is that you came up here to defend yourself with. That wasn't fair to Mr. Mendoza. He was absolutely denied his right to a fair trial. I think this is one of those instances where the trial judge just made the wrong decision. I think that she saw the evidence, and I think she should have said, even as the court has pointed out, it's better safe than sorry sometimes to just give the self-defense instruction.
Well, no, that's when I was a prosecutor. When I was a prosecutor, it was always better safe than sorry because I didn't want the conviction. You know, I didn't know what the appellate court was going to do. But if you look at it strictly academic, why isn't the state's argument correct that if the evidence is not shown, a district court has no duty to give an instruction?
I disagree that the evidence wasn't shown. I think the evidence absolutely showed that he was retreating and was entitled to self-defense even.
Well, the question on an overwhelming evidence is, had that instruction been given, self-defense, would the jury have found him not guilty of murder? Or was the evidence so overwhelming that the failure to give the instruction means the result would have been the same, guilty of murder?
And here, by the way, and I'm going to add to that, if the jury found he was guilty of all these underlying felonies and a killing occurs, then why in this particular instance, as he said, why is this error?
Because in this instance, the felonies were over. The felony murder was over. The initial felonies, the attempt robbery, the home invasion, they were all over. We were in a state of retreat. All three people who came to the house were retreating. They were all getting in cars. They were all getting away. It was over.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm just, based on all that, I'm just asking that you do reverse his conviction. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, this case will stand submitted, and what we're going to do now, I know we have little time, so I know you all have questions, and we want to open it up right now. Just to let you know, it's submitted to the court, so we can't comment from this point forward necessarily on the case, but we will give you a little bit of leeway with the attorneys, and they've been gracious enough to stay here. So if you have any general questions of us or questions to the attorneys, please feel free to give us some questions right now. I watched you all debate the other day, and you did a great job, and I know that with your minds, you have questions. Go ahead. Can you kind of restate the question for everybody when... Oh, there. We've got a microphone. Go ahead.
Okay. So if Mendoza had surrendered and, like, said, hey, I surrender, and, like, put the gun somewhere else, and was like, hey, I surrender, and the people still shot him, would that be considered, like, would the people that shot him be, like, charged for murder for that because it was self-defense, or because he surrendered?
I'm not sure we can answer that specifically because it's kind of, it's pretty closely related to this case. And, you know, but I mean, if I can kind of broaden that out a little bit, I mean, really that's, the question you're asking is, that's where this whole doctrine of initial aggressor comes from, right? The theory of it is, as I asked one of the counsel, if I start a fight and then you retaliate, I can't claim self-defense because I started it. But in the broad principle of law, at some point, under certain facts, that initial aggression has ended. And, you know, when that is, that's really kind of the heart of this case. I don't know if we can even get into
No, I guess we can't, but that's a great question I want to add, because you've been listening, and obviously that is the big issue in this case. So that's a great question. And you can see how it can change depending on what fact you throw into us.
In the sense of there being the self, like in the sense of the fact that what if it actually was self-defense, would it be completely different if maybe witnesses saw the victim of the home invasion, that instead if he wasn't like closing the door, if that's what he intended to do, maybe if he stepped out maybe 1 or 2 feet into his front yard, would that make it a completely different instance? Like, would that actually give more evidence to the fact that it was in self-defense?
Do you guys want to take that? Go ahead.
That's a tough question because, I mean, I feel like the different seconds, you know, like a matter of seconds matter, you know, it does matter. But in this particular case, that's the evidence is that Monty Gibson, the guy who was killed, as well as Joey, who owned the home or who was living there, Monty was his roommate, they didn't come out at all past that threshold. And I would venture to say that, look, if there are armed people, in this case we had 3 people with masks and guns, all right, they kick open the door, and then they all go in with their rifles, with their revolvers, and things like that. Yes, the homeowners started shooting, okay? So they were defending themselves when they shot. When these people started retreating because they had been shot, okay, and then they're out into the street, I think at some point the homeowners have a right still to come out past their doorway, look around to see if these people are still there, you know? And I think that's, you know, the inference that can be brought with the trial is that, look, the gunfire stopped. The door was still wide open. Mind you, it was taken off the hinges. So the door's wide open. They felt like sitting ducks, you know? They felt like sitting ducks in that particular house. So they came out once the gunfire stopped, to try to shut the door to give them some kind of cover. So it would change it a little bit, I think, if they came out, and then at some point there might be an argument that they become the initial aggressors because, you know, they're the ones coming out instead of staying safe in their house. They're the ones coming out, you know, looking for people to shoot. That's different. But at some point, that's why that line is so thin, because is it that they're checking whether they're now safe or trying to make themselves more safe, or are they now trying to seek a quarrel or a fight with the people who came into the house? So the facts of the case matter a lot. I don't even know if I answered
your question. Some more questions? More questions? And you can also ask any questions of, like, the attorneys of, you know, what education they have or anything you want to ask about, like, their job, because one of them's a prosecutor, one of them represents people charged with a crime. She's a defense attorney. So feel free to ask anything like that, too. And by the way, the defendant is not here. He's serving life in Nevada State Prison in these types of cases. At trial, obviously, there's a right for the defendant to be present at trial, especially against, right, the confrontation clause against somebody that's accusing him of a crime. But for appellate purposes, we do not transport, and there's no right for the defendant to be present during proceedings.
Okay, so if the appellant is retreating from the door with the rifle in his lap and Monte comes to the door, is he holding the gun? Or is he with no gun, no weapon, just trying to fix the door?
Go ahead.
The evidence shows that Monte Gibson was not armed. And I would obviously disagree with that, but that's what the evidence shows. The evidence shows that Monte did absolutely have a gun.
Go ahead, Amanda. You go. Go ahead. It's your floor.
I think that that's where you have two sides of something. She has a witness saying one thing. We have witnesses saying other things, and that's what the jury has to decide, who's telling the truth. And in this case, I think that you have somebody saying he had a gun and somebody saying he didn't, and that's always up to a jury to decide.
Maybe you can also add really quick, in this case, two of the people that were involved in the conspiracy turned into state's witnesses. And how did you, well, sorry, he's up there. We'll bring it up next time. Like, how did you handle that as far as what did you say to the jury about them? But go ahead, ask another question. We'll get back to you.
I am very interested in the law and proceedings. So what school, for high school, for an eighth grader, would you recommend for somebody who is interested in law?
Well, the magnet programs, right? I mean, you guys have the magnet programs, ATEC, right?
And I think there's two magnet
Canyon
schools
Springs.
In Clark County that are devoted to the law or focused on the law. One is ATEC and one is Canyon Springs. So if you really know this early that that's what you want to do, you might want to think about those two schools.
Is Valley too?
Can't remember.
I want to say Valley is, but you know what? She would know the best. But it's an interesting area if you're interested in doing it. It's a great field, and you can see how much fun it is.
Yes. Okay.
Got a lot of hands.
This is a question for the defense attorney. Do you ever like do a case that you don't agree with the crime, but like you do it anyway? Has that ever happened? Like.
That's a great question. Go ahead, Ms. Gregory.
That's a great question, and I get asked that a lot. My friend Andrea Luma sitting up here is also a defense attorney who handles murder cases, and I think we both always have to answer that. We don't agree with any crimes. I mean, we don't want to go have somebody kick in our door with guns, and we don't agree with any of it, but we do agree that everybody deserves a right to a fair trial. Everybody in here, everybody in this country has a right to a fair trial, and we feel that our job is to make sure that they get that. That's what we feel our job is, not to let bad guys run around in the street, not to get everybody off. It's just to make sure everybody has a fair trial like the Constitution says they're supposed to have.
And just to add to that, remember, we escaped from England who, you know, somebody could just say, hey, he stole my goat, and that's it. You were killed by the king's people, right? You had no right to anything. Somebody accused you of something, you were guilty until proven innocent. And that's the opposite here. Everybody deserves a fair trial. Everybody deserves that the government, the state of Nevada, prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you are guilty of a crime before you are convicted. And so every American is entitled to a defense attorney, just like Ms. Gregory, to speak on their behalf, to make sure that all of the constitutional rights are guaranteed and that the process is fair.
This is a question for the attorneys. How did you guys go about to prepare for the appeal? Like, what did you do to prepare for this?
So I'm the prosecutor on this case, and so I did the trial. And so what I did to prepare, typically at the DA's office or at the district attorney's office, you have to clerk for a year before you become a deputy who gets to argue in front of judges. And what you do is you read transcripts, because after a trial, this was like a 20-day trial. They do transcripts. They record it, and then they do transcripts. So you read that, then you respond to the appeals. There's a lot of writing. Now that I'm a deputy and I get to argue in front of real judges, to prepare for it this time around, I just read through, and you see my big binder right there. I read through. That's like this much of everything that we had to read to prepare, just so it could jog my memory about the facts, because this was like 2 years ago. Since then, I've done other murders. I've done other cases. So just refresh my memory, and then, of course, read up on the law, because that's important. I knew they were going to ask a lot of things about the law. Are you going to answer?
In preparing this one, it was a little harder for me because Agnes did the trial. Normally, I do a trial, and then I do the appeal. In this case, the trial attorney withdrew, so then I had to do the appeal. So Agnes sat through a 20-day murder trial, and I got to read the transcripts of a 20-day murder trial. That took a long time. So that's what it entailed in me in writing the briefing and then preparing for the argument.
So this question is for the prosecution. What, in your opinion, would constitute an actual retreat?
It was just what I argued. Look, if you know, let's say this is completely different. Let's say you're in the playground and someone comes up and, you know, wants to fight you. And you guys are fighting. You know, one's getting the upper hand on top of you. That gets you on, you know, one of those MMA things where they mount you, that kind of stuff, right? And then you're underneath and you're getting your butt kicked and you're like, dude, stop, I don't want to fight anymore, I'm not trying to hurt you, and you throw no more punches, you get rid of, if you had a weapon, you throw it away, you're saying, I don't want to fight anymore, please stop. I think that's a retreat. I think that's what Mr. Mendoza should have done in this case. Okay, I think he should have been, instead of having that rifle in his hand, he should have thrown it aside, and from then on, hands up, I don't want to fight anymore, I'm not going to hurt you. That, to me, would have been a retreat.
Uh-oh. Tom, oh, what? Yeah, keep going. Until the bell rings, we'll just do it till the bell rings.
Oh, she already asked.
See, now they're more excited.
Okay, so this is a question for the state. Earlier you said that the door was completely off the hinges. So how would you put the door back on? How is he going to shut the door?
It was.
And this will be the last question, and we're going to wrap it up per Ms. Wagner. Go ahead.
It wasn't completely off the hinge. So they knocked it, you know, so hard that it came off a little bit. And so you could see, like, shards of wood on the ground next to the dead body. But it wasn't completely off. It was such that you could still, like, I think the top part was off. And then you could still close it so that it would be shut. So it wasn't, like, on the ground and you had to, like, pick it up and, like, push it back on. No, it was just, it was halfway off the hinge. Yeah.
Okay, I know Ms. Wagner wants us to wrap it up. So what do I tell them, Ms. Wagner? You want to come over here and tell them what to do?
I think we should thank everyone who came today.
Thank you. Thank you, students. Goodbye.